broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for April the 22nd, in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is our two of two. Our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio. Without further ado, let's launch straight into our guest, President of National Taxpayers Union, Pete Sepp, NTU.org. The National Taxpayers Union is the voice of America's taxpayers mobilizing elected officials and citizens on behalf of tax relief and reform. You got to like that, ladies and gentlemen. NTU.org. Pete Sepp, welcome back, sir.
Great to be here.
Oh, man, there is so much to talk about, so little time. Let's start out with this. NTU's rates Congress. So NTU, National Taxpayers Union, rates Congress. It's a program you guys have had in place for some time, right, Pete?
Oh, yes, indeed. This is a system of rating members of Congress based on their roll call votes. Now, there are plenty of legislative scorecards out there that might focus on 10 votes, and they say, well, if you vote 9 out of 10 times with the organization, there's your 90%. You agree with taxpayers, and here's your score. That's not the way we do it. This is a comprehensive system that takes every single roll call vote affecting federal taxes, spending, debt, regulation. In fact, on our last rating, almost 200 roll call votes in Congress were the basis of our scores. We assign a weight to each vote from 1 to 100 based on the relative impact a vote has on taxpayers. So something that spends $1 million of tax money will get a pretty low weight. Something that spends $100 billion will get a very heavy weight. And because we do all of these complex calculations, the scores we produce for each member of Congress based on their fiscal policy voting record are comprehensive. They're the biggest view of a lawmaker's attitude toward fiscal policy issues that you can find.
All right, so let me dig into this and make sure people understand. So what we're talking about is the National Taxpayers Union has their own scorecard of Congress. Where does your congressman or woman sit in relation to not necessarily everybody else, although you can compare them, but really based on a standard of appropriate, you know, constitutional spending, etc. Now, the difference here is that this is a comprehensive tally weighted for reality based on spending dollars. In other words, budgetarily weighted, if you will. So other scorecards are snapshots. This is comprehensive. Other scorecards might focus on whatever they're gauging. The gun owners people would focus on votes related to gun issues, or another one might be related to the environment issues, or whatever else they can come up with. But this one is specifically focused on your taxes, what your spend is when it comes to paying for government. And this is a really important one because I believe it's probably the most comprehensive one out there. Number one, it's the totality of the votes. But number two, anything that relates to dollars relates to this. And so at the end of the day, you kind of get a budgetary reality of, hey, who's the biggest spenders? What projects are wasting the most money? And you start to back into this real economic understanding is what I would call it, Pete, that I think is critical. How long have you guys been doing this?
Ever since 1979, under the current methodology, we actually began a scorecard 10 years prior to that, when we were founded in 1969, but we decided, well, we're just being superficial here. We got to take all the votes. We've got to assign weights to them. So we began doing that in 79. So we've got now 40 odd years of ratings to take a look at.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is significant. They launched 2 years after I was born. They've been at it almost as long as I've been alive, telling the tale of liberty and focusing on really where the voting record of every member of Congress is in relation to your taxes. How does your Congress critter stack up is kind of the question. What's the latest results? Let's talk about a little bit of the highlights, Pete.
Sure. If we want to focus solely on the United States Senate to begin with, for example, the top scorers there, and there are only five who managed to earn A grades from taxpayers based on their scores. You've got Mike Lee of Utah on top, 98%. You've got Rand Paul of Kentucky at 95%. Mike Braun of Indiana, also a 95%. And then Ted Cruz and Pat Toomey. Now, they actually scored below 90%, but like many schools across America, we grade on a curve. And these top five senators are the ones who actually did the best on our comprehensive scorecard. And remember, we're talking about dozens of votes here actually weighted based on their impact on taxpayers.
Where do we go from here then? Those are the top five. Let's cover some of the bottom five and some of the details of the people in between, because some people may mean well, but they missed the boat too, right, Pete?
Yeah. And we certainly do not penalize lawmakers who end up missing votes. We actually say, all right, we're going to give you the benefit of that doubt. Only the votes you show up to cast will be the ones that we use computing your individual score. And boy, it's still an incredible disappointment at the bottom. If you take a look at the worst scorers in Congress, well, you have the Washington State delegation, Maria Cantwell, and Senator Murray at 3% each. Mark Warner of Virginia, 3%. Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire, 3%. This list goes on and on when it comes to single-digit scorers. Unfortunately, these are Democrats, but I would say that there are a number of Republicans who do not score all that well on this rating system. The Mississippi delegation, the South Dakota delegation, they have work to do in improving their scores. They are Republicans. So unfortunately, there is a bipartisan spending problem in Washington, D.C. On tax policy, the differences are pretty sharp between the two policies, two parties. But when it comes to actually spending the money rather than taxing it from people, both parties have some real problems.
All right, Pete, so there you have it. It's interesting when we look at this. The Senate is the smaller body with, we always assume, more power, right? And I understand that,
yes.
And I think there's some truth to that to a great degree. However, really, spending bills are supposed to originate in the House, right, Pete?
Well, most, of course, all tax bills do, and most spending bills do. Members of Congress have kind of blurred those constitutional lines of responsibility over, especially over the past few decades. And I think that has led to more chaos in the budgetary process, less accountability, and a timetable that often defies the capacity of citizens and taxpayers to actually make their voices heard on this legislation. I mean, year after year, lawmakers and leadership in the House and Senate say, we're going to enforce the so-called 72-hour rule. In other words, when a bill is introduced and put out there for consideration, we're going to have 3 business days for everybody to be able to read it and be prepared to make an intelligent choice about it. That's really not what happens in reality. We get rumors about what's in a package. We act on what we think we know is best for taxpayers, but many times a gigantic omnibus spending bill will just be put out there on a Thursday, and members of the leadership will say, we're going to vote on it Friday night or Saturday morning when no one's looking. And that's why organizations like mine exist and others do on numerous other issues that you were talking about, Sam. This happens not just in tax policy, but in all kinds of federal policy. And we all have to be on the lookout to alert people when something bad is moving through Congress.
People need to understand that this is something that you cannot leave to somebody else. You know what? If Congress votes on a bill, let's just say something originates in the House. And the reason I bring that up is because the senators, in a way, have more power. But it's only because we let them. Spending bills need to originate in the House. And therefore, we can stop it, if we're engaged, before it ever even gets to the, quote, supposedly powerful senator. So we need to understand that reality check. And then we need to engage. Because what we can't do is just say, oh, sorry, it's a big bill. You know, he didn't wait the 72 hours. He didn't read it, but he signed it anyway. We need to start to really articulate the narrative that that's just flat out unacceptable. You have no business citing any bill that you haven't read entirely because you swear an oath to the Constitution and you swear an oath to accountability for the actions that you take on my behalf. And if you sign a bill that you haven't read, I mean, it's just like walking into a notary public and just signing a bunch of documents you haven't read relating to your car, your house, your mortgage, your health care, your whatever. Okay, it's very dangerous. And we need to send a clear message that says, if you vote for bills that you clearly haven't had time to read, we will remove you from office and find somebody who will stand up. And if Congress, the House, voted against these bills, simply with the narrative that says this, I'll tell you right after the break, how's that? Pete Sepp with me, Liberty Roundtable, live.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win. They lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
All right, so right before the break, I'm with Pete Sepp, National Taxpayers Union. He's the president of an organization doing a great job helping us understand what's happening, keeping an eye on our Congress representative, or I should say congressional representatives. I was about to say Congress critters, but there you go. Congressional representatives. And the idea here is that, you know what, NTU's rates Congress. And looking at the voting record of every member of Congress, see how your member of Congress stacks up. And I had mentioned that, hey, you know what? All spending bills originate in the House, at least they're supposed to, according to the Constitution. And so, you know what? The senators, we believe, sadly, although they're further from the people, are more powerful. And in many ways, sadly, we've allowed them to become so. But the truth is we can stop these legislative bills before they ever even hit your Senate by dealing with the House of Representatives. And in my opinion, if you could get a body of House of Representative members that would literally say, I voted against this bill because there was no time to analyze it properly. I will not vote for something that I cannot read. I will not vote for something that I cannot understand and be responsible for, and period. And if you even had 10% of the House, so there's 435 people in the House, so if you had 44 House representatives that stood on that line and just said, look, we're voting against it every time, and we're doing it because we haven't had a chance to analyze it. We're not even voting the merits or voting down the merits of a given bill. We're just telling you that we didn't have time to analyze it. They're violating the rules. We're standing against it. And if you and I could demand that and get that 10%, 44 congressmen to do that and make a bold enough and stick together statement to last, you could literally boycott and Shanghai the whole operation and say, look, you're going to obey the rules. You're going to give people time to analyze this. You just will. And if you don't, we're going to remove you every 2 years and put somebody in who will. If the American people, and it wouldn't even take but a couple million of us to demand such action, Pete Sepp, I submit to you that this would change. And we, the people, cannot blame it on our Congress critters. We cannot cop out and act like it's somebody else's fault. Yeah, I know they're doing the damage, but we're letting them. And we're the ones in charge. After all, it's the consent of the governed by which they derive their just powers. Sir, what do you say?
Yeah, I would agree entirely. And, you know, the most famous example that many listeners will remember is when Nancy Pelosi said, we have to pass the Obamacare legislation in order to know what's in the bill and find out. Well, people were outraged at that statement, but it happens far, far more than people think. And if a number of members of Congress are willing to say, no, we're going to need to halt this process until all of us know what we are getting taxpayers into, we would all be better off, and taxpayers have to insist on it. I know there will be folks in Congress along with their staff saying, well, we don't have time to read thousands of pieces of legislation before we vote on it. And I guess my response would be, well, that's a problem in the first place. Why are you writing bills that are thousands of pages long? Separate them out or write them in plain English so everyone has a common language with which to debate the validity and the merits of a proposal.
Well, and not only reduce the size and scope of the bills, but maybe single-issue legislation items would be great. It'd be easier to get your arms around. Maybe it would be better to say, you know what, we don't need 5,000 issues to come up. Let's deal with the most important. Let's start to prioritize our legislative discussions. Let's start to decide what we really need, what we really don't need. Let's try to, in other words, simplification is oftentimes the answer, my friends. Chris from Utah wants to chime in and make a comment. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Sam, Pete, good to hear you guys.
So, hi there.
You know, I had an epiphany and thanks, Pete, for doing such a great job, you and Sam both. So I had an epiphany in 2000 when George W. Bush presumably cut our taxes. I did a little fourth grade math. You know what I discovered? I discovered if you don't cut spending, in fact, you increase it, which we do every year, and you cut the amount of money that the federal government receives, then you have to borrow the difference. But not only do you have to borrow the difference, you have
hold
to
on,
pay
hold on, I want you to
on
say
that
one more time so everybody understands it, Chris.
Yeah, and this is just fourth grade math, so hopefully Okay, so if you cut taxes, the amount that the federal government collects from the people, but you increase spending as we do every year, like clockwork, and you have to pay interest on that amount that you borrow, isn't that a tax increase? Because the interest payments that we then have to pay, it doesn't matter if we have to pay them now or later. So when George W. Bush, quote-unquote, cut taxes and Donald Trump, quote-unquote, cut taxes, didn't they actually increase taxes?
Read my lips.
They increased.
Yes, he did.
Yes. you end up increasing taxes on a future class of taxpayer. That's what it is. I mean, we talk about burdening future generations with our debt. We do very little to actually stop burdening taxpayers in future generations with that debt. And that's the problem. It is. Borrowing is a tax increase in the future. That's what it amounts to. And in fact, you know, truth in taxation language that gets passed in laws at the state and local level, whenever there are bond issues that voters have to decide on, often includes that language. It says This is a vote to increase taxes in the future. And I think that is something the federal government ought to be forced to admit every time. You know, when they say we're going to have a deficit of $900 billion or $2 trillion or $3 trillion this year, I think the wording ought to be changed, and it ought to be required by statute. We are passing a tax increase along to some other taxpayer this year of $980 billion or $2 trillion or $4 trillion.
Yeah, you want to know what the biggest lie in the world is, Pete? It's a little computer joke for you.
Okay.
I have read the terms and conditions.
Yes.
Right? I mean, how many people click on that thing and just move by that EULA or whatever you call it? I read that thing. Move along. You got to go ahead. But sadly, that's kind of what Congress seems to be doing when it comes to these spending bills. Now, Chris is exactly right, but I want to add insult to injury a little bit with the discussion. If we're talking about truth in taxation for a second, not only is it a increased spend in terms of taxes, not only does it burden future generations, in other words, a tax later, as Pete wisely points out, but it also creates inflation. Because when you spend that much and you have to bring that money into existence, whether you do it with printing presses or whether you do it with borrowing notes in a ledger, the reality is you not only have tax that you got to pay it back later with interest, but you also create an inflationary hidden tax as well, Pete.
Yes, yes. And of course, we haven't seen really bad inflation in the high single or low double digits for quite some time. That doesn't mean it can't return, and it will return. I get a kick out of, frankly, this began in the Trump administration, and it continues now in Congress, saying we might as well borrow a lot because the financing is really cheap right now, and the Treasury can leverage its borrowing capacity for the benefit of taxpayers. I mean, that's Orwellian language if I ever heard it. No taxpayer is benefiting from borrowing, certainly not in the long term. And the fact that it's cheap right now is probably a dangerous thing, in that we're going to keep borrowing more and more than we can afford, and the debt service is eventually going to come due. Those are the kinds of spirals that countries get into far more quickly than policymakers can figure a way out of. That's the real problem. Deficits and debt don't matter until suddenly, spectacularly, they do. And policymakers have no way of knowing when that happens.
Chris?
Well, you know, I think we need to give a preemptive apology to our children and our grandchildren, because like you said, Pete and Sam, they're going to be paying the brunt of this. But, you know, I plan on living another 50 years on this earth. I think we are going to experience some of this inflation during our lifetimes, unless we plan on exiting early, which I don't plan to do. We're all in this thing, same thing together. I think we need to go back to fourth grade and learn a little fourth grade math and figure out that we're not pulling the wool over the eyes of anybody. This is going to come back to haunt us either sooner or later. Either way, it is wrong, unethical, and it needs to be stopped. Thank you, gentlemen, for being there.
Thanks for your call. He's spot on, right?
Thank you.
Pete, I think that's really what the NTU is designed to highlight, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. And, of course, as you and I have discussed on the show quite some time ago and since, Sam, the constitutional functions of government, the enumerated powers, once guided the way that we made fiscal policy. It guided the way we taxed. It guided about how much we would spend year after year from revenues, and it kept debt down. We've discarded that constitutional notion, and now we're borrowing like there's no tomorrow.
National Taxpayers Union rates Congress. Where does your Congress critter stack up? NTU.org. President with me, Pete Sepp. More in seconds.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
The House on Wednesday voted largely on party lines to advance a bill that limits the president's authority to issue travel bans on foreign nationals from entering the United States. House Democrats introduced the bill known as the National Origin-Based Anti-Discrimination for Non-Immigrants Act. In 2016, the Obama administration attached a transgender mandate to the Affordable Care Act, framed as a non-discriminatory provision. It would require doctors and hospitals to perform sex change surgeries and provide insurance coverage for this practice. In January, a judge in North Dakota sided with Catholic hospitals in striking down the transgender mandate. However, on Tuesday, the Biden administration appealed the ruling. Dr. Mike Chupp with the Christian Medical and Dental Association tells Fox News they're pushing back on Biden.
As physicians of faith, we represent approximately 20,000. We're Hippocratic physicians, first and foremost, for hundreds of years in the United States. We take an oath to do no harm.
USA Radio News.
This report is sponsored by IBM. With billions of fans around the world, esports are the future of sports and entertainment. IBM is entering the arena by bringing AI and data to deliver best-in-class analytics and enrich the fan experience with the Overwatch League. IBM and the Overwatch League, a professional esports property built around the Overwatch game, launched Power Rankings with IBM Watson to objectively create AI-powered rankings of teams and players. IBM Watson technology helps make sense of the tremendous volume of data available in the game. Corey Shelton, digital strategist at IBM, explains.
As an avid gamer, the application of AI and cloud technology is an exciting development in the world of esports. With so much data and analytics around each unique team, it was impossible for a human being to observe and evaluate each team and player's rankings in real time. With IBM's Power Rankings with Watson, the game is being changed.
Check out Power Rankings at IBM.com/Overwatch.
During his address to the nation Tuesday evening following the conviction of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, President Biden called us in America systemic racists. White House spokesperson Jen Psaki.
One of the president's core objectives is addressing racial injustice in this country, not just through his rhetoric, but through his actions. And what anyone should look to is his advocacy for passing the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, for nominating leaders to the Department of Justice to address long outdated policies, and to ask his leadership team here in the White House to prioritize these issues in his presidency, which is current and today and not from 30 years ago.
It should be noted, Biden was the architect of multiple federal laws in the 80s and 90s that disproportionately jailed black people and contributed to what many people see as systemic racism. NASCAR is at the big track in Talladega, Alabama, Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern on Fox and Motor Racing Network. This is USA Radio News.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman, Pete Sapp. National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org on your radio. So let's talk a little bit more about the House members. I know some of the senators we talked about. Give us the five names of the top senators that have an A grade again. It was Mike Lee, Rand Paul. Who are the other three?
We also have Ted Cruz, Pat Toomey, and Mike Braun.
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Who are the bottom five?
Well, the bottom five, you have the delegations of Washington State. You have the delegations of Virginia. You have the delegations in Rhode Island. So they're all tied.
Oh, boy. Shame on those folks. All right. Let's move to the House a little bit. You know, where are we sitting in the House? Who are the best people and the worst people in the House?
Okay, sure. In the House of Representatives, Thomas Massey of Kentucky, Justin Amash of Michigan, Ken Buck of Colorado, Tom McClintock of California, and Andy Biggs of Arizona are the top five.
And when we say top five, I mean they're the most frugal and careful and responsible with your money, right?
That's right. Those top five had scores of between 94 and 95%. And no one actually has scored a perfect 100%. But the closest lawmakers who've ever come to that 100% mark were Ron Paul, the former House member from Texas. Rand Paul has come very close to that. So there are a few who've gotten 99s, but never an absolute perfect score.
Now, let's be clear. Is that partly because sometimes they see something in a bill that justifies passing it, even though maybe spending-wise it puts them in the not the 100% category, but yet in reality it was smart to pass the bill overall because of the way they put these omnibus bills together, et cetera? Or what do you think the reason might be for that?
Yeah, oftentimes it's because they're presented with an unappetizing choice of whether to vote down an entire bill or to accept the good with the bad. And we, of course, recognize that. We don't expect anyone to have ever scored a 100% for precisely that reason. Lawmakers are not created equal in the House or the Senate when it comes to the rulemakings and the way that bills are brought to the floor. Some have more power than others to shape how legislation takes place in, initially and then how it gets voted on.
And let's be clear, not only are the House members and or the senators not, they're not all equal, if you will. Their circumstances and reasons for voting for things sometimes isn't all equal as well. Some are in big cities or big districts. Some are in tiny districts. And they have all kinds of constituencies pushing them this way and that way. And I'm not saying they should cater to them, but I am saying they do represent them. And there's some influence there that, that happens that affects things anyways, right?
Yes. And that is the number one reason why, as an interest group, taxpayers need to come first. And the way they do that is by contacting their lawmakers constantly, by studying budgets and saying, we know what's going on here. We're not ignorant of what this legislation would do. Here's what we want you to change and why. That's how other interest groups, from those who want more federal spending and more taxes to those who have social issues or other issues on their agenda, they study legislation, they go to their lawmakers, they pressure them to vote a particular way, and they have the knowledge and the grassroots capability to do it. We're about giving that same kind of capability to taxpayers.
You got to dig it, ladies and gentlemen. NTU.org is the website. So let's talk a little bit about issues then. We talked about who are the biggest spenders, and I guess we got to get to the House. Who are the worst people in the House, the same as the Senate?
Well, I'm afraid so. I'm afraid that some of the lowest scores are among House Democrats again. That doesn't
that's
mean
why you talked
aren't.
About delegations, right, Pete? Because it kind of encompasses the whole group of them, if you will. I mean, there might be an exception here or there, but in general, it's these delegations, and that represents House and Senate factions, right?
Yes, yes. And in the House, of course, there are well over 100 lawmakers who only scored in the single digits. I mean, I'll give you examples here just from the state of California. Congresspeople Barra, Brownlee, Congresspersons Carbajal, Cisneros, Costa, Cox, Davis, Garamendi, Hill. Okay, that's just A through H. We've got Levin, Matsui, McNerney,
and all these people
Panetta.
Are from these states, and that's why he's talking about delegations so blatantly, is that it's you can't even almost single them out in a way, right?
That's right. There are so many of them that, I mean, you can report those who have some of the lowest scores, but then there are so many who are in company with them. It's very difficult sometimes to sort through.
All right, let's talk a little bit about issues now, because we talked about people. And again, the reason that you talk about people is not to attack people individually, ladies and gentlemen. It's always appropriate to remain civil and decent about it. But you can be insistent on the proper role of government and insistent on who and what they represent on your behalf. So we need to be civil, but we also need to be very bold and very consistent about our expectations. And we need to create accountability when our expectations are simply not met. Now, if they, you know, hey, they're not perfect, like nobody's got 100% score, that's one thing. But blatant disregard for the constituents and or the will of the people needs to be jettisoned yesterday. So I bring this up because there's people to talk about, and we need to reelect or elect those who will you know, keep their oaths and have a budgetary mindset, et cetera, and have a friendly disposition and relationship with the taxpayer. That's we the people, by the way. But in addition to that, though, there are issues. In other words, there are top issues to which primarily ratchet up the debt. There are issues that are just spend hungry, might be the term that I would use, that we really need to be cognizant of in some of these reports as well, because then you take all the votes that they've made, and you kind of isolate that into issues that are relevant to understand as well, right, Pete?
Yes, absolutely. And of course, one of the bigger issues on our radar screen right now is the most recent plan that passed Congress. We call it the fourth COVID-19 relief package, has a lot of undesirable elements in it. The packages that came before it, the three, beginning with the CARES Act, and then another that passed in the summer of 2020, another that passed near the end of 2020. Now this fourth one have various elements in it to provide individuals and businesses with relief from actions, frankly, that government itself took to try and contain the pandemic, right or wrong. Citizens deserved some kind of compensation financially for those government actions. Well, there were a lot of other extraneous things, especially in the most recent one, $350 billion of aid to state and local governments, for example. Now, states and localities actually had some uneven fiscal performance during 2020, but it turns out, by and large, most of them weathered the pandemic in terms of their finances without a whole lot of pain. Some had revenues that were flat. Some had revenues slightly lower in the single-digit percentages. Others actually experienced increases in revenues in 2020 versus 2019. There was not this catastrophe that would justify a $350 billion grant in federal aid on top of aid that had already been given in the previous three packages. And what we're trying to do now is say, look, we need to repurpose that debt money so that it doesn't burden taxpayers in the future. If we could say, for example, states can use it to provide tax relief at their level to citizens, that would be a good use, at least, of the money, as opposed to bailing out pension systems. If infrastructure is a desirable thing, well, the money has already been voted in the, to the tune of $350 billion in aid. Why not say that this can go to infrastructure as well, instead of piling more debt into the situation? Those are going to have to be practical remedies that are not ideal, but at least they are better than making the situation even worse for current and future generations of taxpayers.
Well, and that's an important thing to understand as well, Pete Sepp, NTU.org, because you know what? A lot of times the solutions are not Hail Marys. Oftentimes the solutions are not one and dones. Oftentimes the solutions are incremental and take consistency and dedication and moving the ball forward 1 yard at a time. We'll talk about that with Pete Sepp in seconds.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Dad, can you make him stop?
Honey, he needs to practice.
He's been at it an hour.
Well, just trying to be patient.
Dad, it sounds like a cat calling for help or something.
Worse, a basement full of cats.
Yeah.
You know, hon, it is a little hard on the ears.
Not you, too.
Well, maybe we can all play a game. Andrew, do you want to play a board game? How about we watch a video? Hide and seek? Oh, I don't know. I give up.
Maybe we could all just sneak out of the house.
Honey, he's 9 years old. We can't leave him home alone.
Man.
We can make him practice with a sock.
Well, I guess we'll have to get some ice cream.
Did I hear someone say ice cream?
Family, isn't it about time?
Oh, I see the practice hasn't hurt your ears.
Well, I'm a serious musician.
Funny that you never seem to get better on that thing.
Works every time.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Hey, where'd all these cats come from?
Live and talking about solutions every time on your radio. This is the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live. Pete Sepp, president of National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org on your radio. And I was kind of mentioning that, you know, a lot of times we want a one-and-done solution. We want to just solve a problem. We think it's a TV show and it takes 30 minutes to just get the bad guys, you know? But the reality is it's not just a Hail Mary, Pete. It takes real work, a yard, a foot at a time to move that ball.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And you start with things that are right in front of lawmakers' faces and say, okay, you're focused on this right now. Here's how you can sharpen that focus to be sure that you're bearing the taxpayer's view in mind while you're making policy. An example, of course, has to do with telemedicine. A lot of states ended up reversing restrictions on what types of services could be conducted between patients and doctors online and how you did it. A lot of restrictions were placed on, well, if you want to talk to your doctor about a cardiac problem, you have to come into their office. You can't actually do that using an online connection. Well, a lot of those restrictions were swept away owing to the pandemic. People couldn't get out.
And thank heavens, by the way, nobody melted down, right, Pete?
That's right. And there was not some catastrophic problem of patients getting bad advice online. In fact, it actually improved the situation because people found it more convenient to quickly consult their doctors on issues that they might otherwise have just let fester for a while because they couldn't find the time to make a doctor's appointment and actually get in the car and go there. So it's helped patients be healthier. And those restrictions are things that we're saying to policymakers now, well, okay, the pandemic seems to be easing in many areas of the country, but that doesn't mean you have to put those restrictions back into law. They're working okay. They're showing us that freedom and free markets, less regulation are working. And it doesn't have to take a pandemic for policy to change. Why not just keep those restrictions off and let patients and doctors communicate with each other? That's one practical thing we can do right now. Other things include, for example, tax advantage savings accounts for things like child care. Well, people have not been able to avail themselves of child care as much as they had been before the pandemic, but those balances that they have in their accounts could disappear. This is money that they saved aside for providing child care that the IRS is now saying, well, it was use it or lose it. So you're going to have to give up that money you set aside in these tax advantaged accounts. We say, you don't have to do that. Why not change the law to allow those balances to keep rolling over? And there's no reason why, if it's a bona fide account that you have to report anyway every year to the IRS, that you can't just maintain those balances. That's a smart idea. That's rewarding people.
Amen to that. And here's a clear idea. A lot of us would say, hey, get rid of the IRS. It's bogus anyway. Or a lot of us would say, jettison those accounts. The government has no business determining what I can do with my money and giving special privilege to certain kind of savings or certain kind of expenditures, etc. I get that and agree in general. But we're already in the middle of the situation. The law is already the law. All we're talking about is saying the government will take your money now because it's use it or lose it. And we're simply saying change the law to preserve it, keep it in the hands of the people, not the government. Now, that's an incremental reality. Because, again, it's not really my preference, but it's way better than what we've got. I'll tell you that right now. And that is the quintessential point. All right, Pete Sepp, I got two items that I want to get to before the end of the hour, so we're going to kind of need to hustle. First one is this, and it's a headline from your website. Josh Hawley, who has been kind of the darling of the conservatives, it seems, as of late. However, he's missed the boat on this one. Josh Hawley's legislation puts every consumer in the crosshairs of big government. I guess Will Yepes, is that how you say his last name, wrote the piece?
Yes. Yes. This is unfortunate because Senator Hawley has a lot of good ideas, but this is not a good one. It's called the Bust Up Big Tech Act, S-1204. It would ban certain companies from selling or promoting their own goods or services on their sites, and they would have to be divested from online hosting. This is essentially aimed at Amazon, Google, YouTube, Netflix, other companies that provide a lot of online services. Probably all of us have a gripe with at least one of the companies I just named, but I can tell you, calling in the federal government, the Federal Trade Commission, and Congress to say, you're too big as a company, we're not going to allow it, we're going to break you up, that is a dangerous grant of power that will have lots of unintended consequences, especially for smaller businesses. If Congress can do this to Google or Facebook or Twitter or what have you, they can do it to any other business in America. And that's why we should look for other alternatives.
And by the way, the Bust Up Big Tech Act, it's one of those things that's named so well that at first you go, well, by golly, of course. I mean, for crying out loud, they've been abusing us for too long. It's easy to get behind that well-named piece of legislation. But in my opinion, it's disaster. And I'll give you kind of proof in point. Remember a couple of things that you need to understand. Whatever government power you give, even if it sounds good on the surface for a given reason, understand that that power has a double-edged sword every time. So government starts breaking up big tech. Then government says, well, we got to do this and that on the internet. And then government says, well, we got to this and we got to that. And we got to, okay, why don't we focus on the laws instead of busting up big tech? Why don't we just make sure that there's no subsidies for big tech? Okay, why don't we just not have the government help them get so big? Half these companies got so big because they had government special privilege and subsidy in the first place. The answer is to take that away and let the free market work, not bust them up or subsidize or do whatever other manipulative. So whenever you take defensive action, you're making sense. Whenever you go offensive, you better be very, very careful indeed. So defensive would say, hey, let's just jettison their subsidies and their special privileges, and let's start there and see how the market changes. And then we can go from there in another defensive or flattening model or open, you know, creating a level playing field idea. That's where I would start, Pete.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we so many policymakers think that there's this competitive race and they're looking at the ones that are ahead in the race, overcoming the hurdles, and they kind of want to throw a rock at those racers and slow them down. They should be looking behind themselves and saying, wait a minute, look at all the hurdles we've put up for everybody else to try and run in this race. Maybe we have to think about tearing those down first.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, go read it, though. This column is incredible, and I'm not here to attack Josh Hawley. A lot of things he does are really good. I get it, but in this one, I believe he's missed the mark. And I want to be polite and decent and civil, but I also want to make sure we point out the truth, because truth in taxation matters. Josh Hawley's legislation puts every consumer in the crosshairs of big government. NTU.org to read that article. Before the end of the hour, it is Earth Day. I don't know if you know that. It is Earth Day. And it's the 51st annual celebration of Earth Day. The global theme this year, they say, is to restore our Earth. Earth Day 2021 will be involving, they say, a billion people in 192 countries, and the focus will be on natural processes as well as emerging green technologies and innovative thinking, they say, that can restore the world's ecosystems largest, or the world's ecosystem. They say it's the largest secular holiday on the planet. Now, I bring this up, Pete, because I don't want to get into the environmental discussions right now. I believe God gave us the earth and we should take care of it. That doesn't mean I believe that we should let politicians use it as a, you know, bludgeoning tool to abuse us into them gaining greater control over you and me and our lives. Nevertheless, the reason that I focus on this right now is that is one of the issues. I told you there are certain touchstone issues, if you will, that literally can cost a gazillion dollars without even realizing it if you're not very careful indeed. This is one of them, sir.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Many preferred policy solutions from some of the environmental organizations participating in Earth Day are subsidize, loan, spend, and tax. And those are the kinds of policies that can cost taxpayers trillions of dollars. Really, we are talking about trillions, not just billions here. Wealth taxes, financial transaction taxes, all sorts of carbon taxes. And these are not taxes that would replace current federal taxes, which might be a worthwhile debate. They would be stacked on top of it all. And there are better solutions if your problem is carbon emissions, for example. Just one, look at how much we could save in carbon emissions in the air travel sector if we had more efficient routing of aircraft. All that's going to take is modernizing our air traffic control system, turning it over to a consortium of companies and unions and all who are involved in commercial air travel, funding that system with a user fee instead of taxes, and improving its efficiency. Dozens of other countries all over the world have done that. We haven't. If we did, we would not only be helping taxpayers, we'd be helping the environment.
I don't know how to respond to this because, you know, we do care about the earth, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want you to believe that nobody cares about the earth. It's important. We should be good stewards. No doubt about it. But we should also prevent politicians from using this as a touchstone. We can spend anything we want plan. And or we can change the game to lord over everybody plan. We've got to be very careful with that balance. And we got to be very careful that we watch expenditures on this. Wise choices don't mean spend choices every time.
That's exactly right. Spending more is an easy temptation. It makes it look like you're doing something to respond to a problem. But in many cases, you're making the problem worse in ways that you don't foresee until years ahead, when you find yourself in greater debt with less flexibility to respond to the next challenge.
There you have it. Any final words, Pete? I know there's a lot going on, and with Joe Biden in position, it's a different game than when Trump was there. But what ought we be doing? What are you guys working on? Give me a final 30-seconder.
It's easy to say that it's a hopeless political environment, but we're making bipartisan progress with measures to improve efficiency of infrastructure, preserve the best parts of the 2017 tax cuts, slow down federal spending. And we're not only doing this at the federal level, we're doing it at the state and local level as well. Taxpayers are empowered now more than ever before. All they need to do is join their fellow taxpayers who are already using those tools of empowerment.
Understand that NTU also has partnership programs to help you crank up an organization in your local municipality, to help you understand, and they provide blueprints and guidance and support. And I mean, the list is endless. You got to check it out, NTU.org, and you got to say, how do I get involved? What can I do? And then what help can I get as a partner with NTU.org to make a difference in my area? It starts with you. you become two, two become the few, then they become the many, and then, hey, we make changes that are absolutely beneficial. And it all starts with the desire to make a difference. You can do it, people. NTU.org. Thanks, Pete.
My pleasure.
All right, there he goes. Pete Sepp doing a phenomenal job. We'd like to wish him a wonderful weekend. And I'm Sam Bushman. We the people can restore our republic, folks, but you got to work hard. Will you help us? LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net.